And that's definitely the ideal world that I would like to see made. Capitalism will never get you there, because capitalism will not automate everything, because there's no profits to be made in automating everything.
But
there's no way to get a profit. They do occasionally. It depends on whether or not it's cheaper to spend the capital to do the automation than to... And also it can cause its own decline. So automating things can actually, once you drive enough the labor force out, and then that labor force can't find jobs, then they stop purchasing, and then you have a decline cycle. You know, you have boom busts that are made from that. So capitalism actually can't get rid, and it automates things that aren't even necessarily undesirable. It only automates things that stand to make the best profit, rather than things that are undesirable.
Okay, thanks, Kevin. Any call back there?
Yeah, a couple things. This idea of capitalism and work is of capitalism being the final disimposition of work, so that even now that we've got rising unemployment, those of us who still have jobs, unfortunately, still have to work all the hours. It's not like we can go, let's share out all the work so that we all work, we don't have to do something. No. It's either people got to have no money and be unemployed, or people got to be working 50 hours a week and still slaving away. But what I particularly like about capitalism and work is that it's invented a new form of work. Whereas before capitalism, we had work that people didn't want to do, but it was necessary, chores, if you like. And then we had work that people wanted to do. Some of it being necessary, looking after kids and stuff like that, or some of it just being pure self-gratification, whatever. So capitalism has invented a new form of work, which is work that is neither voluntary nor necessary. People have to do it, but it's unnecessary. They have to do it because they need the wage. It's unnecessary because the system is that inefficient that it's in no one's interest to say, like, this is a waste of fucking time and resources. And I think we find that in all of our working lives. There's nobody who hasn't got a job that doesn't think, like, some of this stuff we do here is really fucking stupid. The only reason we're doing it is because the management don't want to fucking know about it, and it's not worth our while to do it. So we know it's crap if we do it anyway. And that's part of the inefficiency of society that we live in today. And there must be another way to do this. That's why I
thanks very much. Any other points? Questions?
Yeah, I think, like, it's quite an interesting one, because even at the moment, the level of development we have, the capital has given us economically, the amount of waste is amazing. In any logical, sensible society that was just organised to satisfy people's needs, you could probably get rid of maybe up to half the working hours that we could put in at one stroke. Like, most of banking and finance and insurance would go, because if people are guaranteed, like, you know, they'd say three falls on the roof of your house, but you're going to get it replaced, you know, like, you're not going to have to sort of go without the roof, and, you know, society would argue, get rid of all that stuff, day one. Most of advertising, fair enough, there's some new product that you want to let people know about, but do we really need to be told every night that Guinness exists? Like, I think we know. You know, there are so many things like that, like, from day one you can do. And the other thing that always strikes me is that if a cleaner is out sick, long term, or on maternity or something, or a secretary, or a porter, or somebody like that, that would be replaced. When your manager is out sick, they never call in a local manager. They never send to an agency saying, shit, like, we're down a manager, can you send one out by 10 o'clock? Like, how necessary are most of these people? So even before you even talk of reorganising society more, that's what, immediately we can point to so much stuff, like, that almost on day one, you can get rid of and massively reduce the working week, but at the same time, producing more of the stuff that people need. And of course, we get rid of most of the built-in obsolescence that goes on, like, you know, the way, like, you watch on TV sort of that London to Brighton vintage car run, like, and there's cars 100 years old and they're still going on the road. Now, I'm not saying that we want 100 year old cars, I don't want them with no roof for that, but they're still running. Do you even see, like, a Ford from 15 years ago? No, it's falling to bits already, like, most of it, because they're deliberately made that way, you know, so that you'll have to keep buying replacements. How long does the average fridge last? How long does the average stereo last? You know, like, it's not like sort of the radiogram that your granny has in her front room that's been there stuff now, you're lucky if you get 5, 6, 7 years out of it. And like, all that stuff go immediately. Like, and I think when you look at it like that, you can see it isn't really such a massive task to develop a far more sane, people-centered economy.
Thanks very much.
Would it not be good for people to join together and create kind of like a model so that there's something that people can actually see is working rather than just people talking about it?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. It is quite difficult in like an advanced, you know, in advanced industrial society to create sort of networks of economies that are sufficiently large that they really show people that, you know, you can produce things in a very different way. And if you start going that direction and did actually get to scales where you could do that, I think you'd already be at the point of a sort of conflict with the state, because they'd be viewing it as a threat, exactly. So I think that should be done as much as possible. You know, at some point, you know, if the movement's large enough, we should start, you know, taking over factories and start doing production for the needs in our communities, etc., and try to network these, you know, democratic workplaces together as much as possible. But that's the point at which, when that starts happening, I think you're in a situation like you are in 1936 in Spain, where you're on the verge of revolution or in a revolution, and the capitalist state will actually start viewing that as a serious threat. So
what do you do about that?
About the threatening the capitalist state? You have to defend, I guess you have to defend yourself against it. Yeah. Defend against that in order to defend the gains of the revolution. So,
I think all we need to do is, for what we're talking about today, it's quite evident, look across the room there, we have empty buildings. I mean,
empty buildings everywhere.
Yeah. It's the same in every city, and yet you have homelessness and all the rest of it. But I think that's quite evident there. I just want to ask, what do we mean by workers' control? Do we mean run by a union, a workers' assembly, and also the question of crime? Although we would say that most crime will be eradicated in an anarchist society, obviously most people not need to go out and rob, etc., or maybe shops and all, etc., because most people in prisons today are not in for murder and rape. Most people in today for stealing and stuff like that, there, or for not paying fines and all, etc. So how would we deal with crime, which will still occur in a future society, and police force, etc.?
Right, okay, so the first question, let me just deal with the police in question first. So I think that, as you said, in a sort of anarchist society, there'd be a lot less crime, because there wouldn't be practically any property crime. There'd be very little reason for having property crime. And a lot of property crime happens also in relation to drugs and getting drugs. So if drugs were legal, if you legalized it to the extent that, you know, it's reasonable to legalize it, then you'd have a lot less crime around drugs and the drug trade. Making something contraband creates avenues to create gangs and get money in accumulation. If you get rid of money in accumulation and allow people to you know, indulge in you know, what they want and provide treatment for people who want to stop doing drugs, etc., freely, give them options to get out, then, and also, you know, reduce the stress in general society that people have, which often drives people into sort of drug habits and stuff like that are destructive, then you're in a situation where there's far fewer people that are going to be in prison, vastly fewer. You know, I think it'd be very reasonable to expect less than 10% of the people that we currently have in prison. Now after that, you know, you end up with people in prison for other things, assault or whatever, over disagreements and stuff like that. And that, we do have to do something about that. So, but a democratically controlled community policing force where people are really accountable to the population in their area and people know who they are, and perhaps, you know, it has to be done through shifts or something like that. Maybe it's everybody has to be in the force at some point, or maybe, I don't know, it would have to we'd have to try different things and see what works best to keep a very accountable policing system happening. But I think that, you know, for sociopaths or any of these sorts of psychological disorders that people might have, a lot of those people should go into some sort of psychological program rather than prison. And really, there should be prisons really shouldn't exist, excepting for completely insane individuals. And then it's not really a prison; it's not a punishment system. It's to keep them from harming other people, and themselves.
Thanks, Kevin. Any other points?
Yeah, Jake, send on what you're saying about crime. Most crime is caused by economic struggle. Like, theft is because people need food to survive. The necrosis from a bad economy causes violent crimes and murder. A study was done, it was over a five-year period in London, when unemployment went up by 15%, the amount of violent crimes during that period went up by 67%. That's true.
Yeah.
Good point. Just on that crime thing there, due to my involvement in anti-fascist activity, said he plugging the next talk, I've had the misfortune of spending a couple of spells at Her Majesty's pleasure. And it does teach you one thing very much about society, which is that there are very, very few rich or middle class people in prison. You know, most people in prison are there because they come from a background of poverty and sort of deprivation or exclusion. And now that cultures grow, you know the types of cultures that grow and the criminality grows up with that. But it's where they started from, really, condemning to be spending most of their lives in prison at the time they were born almost. So I think a lot of that would be Kevin.
I don't know if I asked, but then
you had another question. I forgot what it was. What was the first one you asked?
What do we mean by that? Mean? In regards to the difference, like, obviously we don't believe in nationalisation or state control, and believe in workers' control, as in the people control or communities control things.
Right. So workplaces should be democratically controlled. So you shouldn't have bosses, and you shouldn't, you know, have people who are underlings or whatever. You should have, you know, if there are going to be positions where specific people will have specific skills and, you know, have to sort of fill a role or whatever in that particular business. But the entire organization of work should be democratic and should be done in a democratic way. Now, when we say work, so that's one aspect of workers' control. There's another aspect of workers' control, which is like, where is work going to be created and how are we going to administer the means of production? So one, in order to create the means of production, you have to have workers somewhere else make that means of production. So the workers that work, for instance, a loom or something like that to produce textiles won't actually be textile loom makers generally. You'll have some other group that does textile loom manufacturing. Okay, so society somehow has to manufacture the loom and then give it to those workers, right? So really, society in general controls the means of production, not the workers in a particular workplace. Okay, but those workers in that particular workplace will control how they engage in production on those facilities. So workers' control has sort of two meanings. It means you control, you know, how work is organized in your workplace, but it also means that in general the economy is controlled by the community in general, to the extent that it makes sense, you know. I mean, on the scale that it makes sense to control production.
Thanks for that. Kevin, anybody else have a point to raise or a question?
Is that not the same as nationalisation then, as we had under the Labour government, like post-World War, where whole entire swathes of the economy was nationalised? What's the difference there?
What's the difference between nationalisation and workers' control?
Yeah.
Well, nationalisation means that you're giving the means of production to the state, in real terms, right? So the state is a cadre that controls the political atmosphere, and then you give them the means of production. What you're actually generating there is you're generating a company controlled by some elite group that then dictates who their workers are. So it's state capitalism.
Yeah.
That's quite different.
Change
and the reason,
bosses.
Yeah, it's a change of bosses. It's, so what, you know, the real difference between that state capitalism, where the state owns the means of production, and you know, an anarchist society, is that the polity controls the means of production, not an elite cadre, but everyone.
Okay, thanks, Kevin. Any other points? Any questions?
You're saying about the thing about creating an example or whatever. Could you, because of the threat or whatever, could you make it seem to exist as if it is a business, but it isn't really?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely...
Because that's kind of what politicians do. So you're just kind of like doing the same as them, but...
Right, so
you know what I mean? They say one thing, but really it's like, because you're doing
something else. Well, I mean, there have been attempts to do, like, have cooperative movements. They've generally not been on very large scales, and they generally haven't controlled whole chains of production.
Right.
So trying to do that is quite difficult, because we can't get a hold of the means of production very easily. The capitalist class controls capital. That's why they're called the capitalist class. They get to control the means of production. It's very hard for us to get control of these things. So unless you could amass a huge fortune somehow, how are you going to get an entire chain of production in order to administrate it yourself? So
couldn't you focus on doing that, just with the outcome that you just need to create wealth collectively to then be able to then take control of that?
Well, we could try to do, you know, try to accumulate wealth collectively.
Yeah.
But I think you'll find that if you got 99% of people on your side, you still wouldn't have very much wealth. The 1% control a vast, you know, a huge percentage of the amount of wealth in society. And that means they control a huge percentage of the total means of production. So even then, you'd be living at the margins of society. Like, if you could do it, you'd have maybe between 15 and 35% if you could get 99% of people on your side.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you're talking about a very small fraction. I think, you know, the ways in which we've seen big movements happen is through expropriation, where workers get into a situation where the state's not able to keep them from stealing the means of production from the capitalist class.
Right.
Expropriate it, just take it over and start doing production for ourselves rather
Argentina.
Than for them. Yeah, Argentina is a good example. I mean, a recent example. Not
Did
the best example, though, probably. There have been examples in Argentina where the means of production were taken over by the workers themselves to do production for themselves. Now they haven't, like, it hasn't been a large enough movement that they actually get whole supply chains.
Yeah.
So they're mostly just sort of islands of worker control in a capitalist economy, which makes it very difficult for them because they do have to compete against other. But even under that competition, they've done amazingly well and they've done better than they would have otherwise. But you know, it's not sufficient. We really do need to take over whole chains of production at some point. And how to do that? I'd say our best bet is probably expropriation at some point. That means, like, taking over the means of production.
So getting everyone on side, basically.
Yeah, get people towards that idea and get enough people onto that idea and you just say, okay, you know,
Let's
what are you
going to
do? Let's just do it. It's ours now. It's not the capitalist classes.
So it's about promoting these ideologies and getting everyone on side.
Yeah. I mean, but what you're saying about, like, you know, demonstrations do help. I mean, demonstrating things, even if it's small scale and not perfect,
yeah.
it does help to build, you know, ideas.
Show that it
yeah,
can
exactly.
Yeah.
To show that it can happen.
Yeah.
The recent example was the Fistian workers' dispute, which happened in England as well as Belfast. Basically, they took over the factory as a protest in order to get the jobs back or to
yeah.
get greater. But the fact that they had that was a greater bargaining position. They had to get concessions from the politicians, whatever. But the Argentine example was more, it occurred more because there was massive high unemployment and basically the economy collapsed and the banks wouldn't give money to anyone, so
there was
massive demonstrations on the streets and basically the bosses fucked off to wherever they came off from and basically the option was that host ways moving certain cities. I don't know how large scale it was, but to quite a couple of hundred of factories were taken over. Communities just set up that community assemblies as well to basically make sure things are still taken over. Like, but that's where the class comes in between that and trying to take over the whole lot. Like.
Yeah.
I think the cooperatives as a thing as a living example, tend to be relatively successful in areas where you don't require a lot of capital. You know, like if you can get enough people and enough money together, but you can do sort of co-op restaurant, co-op bar, you know, maybe, you know, clothes shop, you know, stuff like that. But when you get into bigger stuff, that's when the real problems arise. So I experienced, say, Triumph Motorcycles in Britain, or a good one is Cranach Furniture in Navan, which for about 20 years was a worker-controlled property. Like, so it became a non-economic firm. The workers basically got for almost nothing, like basically their redundancy when it was going to buy the stuff. They ended up producing, but because they were operating within capitalism, what happened was other furniture manufacturers started lowering their prices. So the guys then were lowering their own wages. Then when they went to the banks and said, well, look, you know, we obviously need capital, we need investment for more modern machinery and, you know, better fleet of trucks to deliver stuff to the stores and all that. The banks, first of all, said no, because like a co-op, like, you know, we just don't deal with them. And then they said, okay, we will, if you allow us to put our manager in charge, and our manager will have the final say. And the guys ended up being very convinced there was no other alternative. And that didn't, then when they needed the next, like it was working relatively okay. Then when they needed the next tranche of capital, like further investment, the banks of course then said, well, no, this time the condition is that you're going to have to basically go to the company, sell shares and sell us the majority of the shares, so that the bank ends up owning the firm, like that's the guarantee against the loan. And that sort of thing has been done. So many things. I think basically, I suppose the ruling class ain't stupid. They'll allow a few things to exist on the margins, but once they see stuff as a real threat, whether it's by example or in other ways, they tend to sort of close ranks and sort of think, right, so far and no further, we're not letting you go. A bit like, you know, on sort of the bigger scale, Chile in 1973, where what you had was really just sort of a reforming social democratic government. Not that different to sort of an old Labour type government, though in the Chilean context it was quite radical. What happened? The Americans organised a military coup. You know, it's just like, I think it does get, say, when you get beyond sort of on the margins, you then quickly face into who's going to be running the country, because the ruling class are usually smart enough and spotting when this stuff is happening, and there's no fucking way, not that these guys go any further. So I think it is quite limited until you're at the stage where sort of saying, well, actually, the majority now are sort of confident enough and that we are going to try and take back our country, take back the world.
Anybody wants to make a point or a suggestion? So.
Just one more point on that thing about the problem of co-ops and capitalist society. The way capitalist society works, the thing that makes capitalists capitalists is that they have to compete with other capitalists. It's really the market that creates the social relations. Like, so the problem by setting up co-ops is you end up, even though internally you may not have the authority and the hierarchy that you would have in a capitalist firm, you're still having to interact with the market in the same way as any other firm. So you're still having to compete, like the example that Alan gave. And it's very difficult. It's even more difficult from the fact that you're probably almost certainly still having to pay wages and to use money, and that most of your people who are workers are still dependent on buying things in the market, be they food, rent, electricity, and so on, to live. So it is quite difficult to escape, you know, to work your way out of capitalism through that, say, because unless you find a way of radically exiting from the market, and the way to do that is not to go, from our point of view, the way to do that is not to go away and try and find some corner of planets uninhabited and start all over again, but to say, actually, these streets, these buildings, etc., were made, if not by us, then, you know, our forefathers and foremothers. So this is our society, but we just need to take it back.
Okay, thanks very much, everybody. Thanks very much. And we're going to take a 10-minute break. The next meeting is on combat and racism and the rise of the far right, and the speakers will be those who have been involved in anti-racist and anti-fascist activity. So that will be taking place in about 10 minutes.